You're listening to Lozano Smith's podcast, where we discuss important changes in the law and legal decisions that affect public agencies. This is part one of our comprehensive Janus podcast, where you will hear Lozano Smith attorneys Lou Lozano, Dulcinea Grantham, Darren Kamea, and Gabby Flowers discuss the Janus v. AFSCME Supreme Court decision, including its impact on California law and potential conflict with Senate Bill 866. Thanks for tuning in.
Our purpose this morning is to provide general guidance regarding Janus and its related legislation in California and state the clear requirements of these new legal developments. We are not providing specific legal advice, which may depend upon the specific facts and circumstances that are unique to each of you. However, we will present issues for you to consider and prepare to address in your own public agency. With that introduction, let me turn this over to Gabby Flowers, who is moderating our discussion. Gabby?
Thanks, Lou. Again, thanks everyone for joining. Obviously, this is a huge monumental change in the law in the U.S. and, of course, in California. Our team has also developed a comprehensive Janus toolkit, which we can make available upon request. Again, as Lou mentioned, the intent of today's discussion is to answer some of the most significant questions, provide practical advice, and give you some tips to implement going forward. Kind of before we dive into the questions, so everyone's on the same page, I'll kind of give an overview of Janus and then also an overview of SB 866. So as many of you know, Janus versus AFSCME was a lawsuit that made its way to the U.S. Supreme Court following the 4-4 split decision in the Friedrichs versus CTA case out of California. The primary issue before the court in both cases was whether a public agency employer could compel agency fee payers to pay agency fees or whether such fees violate employees' First Amendment rights to the U.S. Constitution. On Wednesday, the court held in Janus that mandatory and involuntary agency fees in public sector employment violates the First Amendment. So just so we're clear on terminology, because terminology is critical in this case and in the subsequent legislation in California, agency fee payers are employees who do not wish to be part of the union, but who are compelled by law to pay what are called agency fees. They're also sometimes called fair share fees. They're also sometimes called service fees. These are fees germane to collective bargaining, grievance processing, contract administration, that sort of thing, but they exclude, fees for political activities or ideological activities of the union. So contrast that with dues payers, which are employees who have consented to be in the union and voluntarily pay union dues. Both for everything that the agency fee payers pay for, in addition, they pay for the ideological and political activities of the union. I'm not going to get into the court's reasoning, as the goal of this particular discussion is to provide guidance to you all going forward. But if you have some spare time and want to engage in some easy reading, I would encourage you to read the actual decision. So the key thing to remember is involuntary agency fees are now unlawful as of Wednesday, and they can no longer be deducted going forward on an involuntary basis. Okay? So that's kind of the brief overview of Janus. In anticipation of Janus, several bills were introduced in California in anticipation of this change in the law. One of these bills, SB 866, was signed into law just hours after Janus dropped, and it became effective immediately. Many of you are probably scratching your head saying, well, I never heard, why am I only hearing of this legislation, in the middle of June or only in the past few days? And the reason is because it was drafted as a trailer bill and was able to be fast-tracked through the legislative process. So there are three key components to SB 866, again, all of which went into effect once the governor signed it on Wednesday. The first is in response to AB 119. So remember all those negotiations you were going through over the last year with your unions to implement AB 119 concerning new employee orientations and onboarding. Remember that? I'm sure you do. So SB 866 adds another layer to that, that change in the law. So as of Wednesday, the date, time, and location of new employee orientations is confidential, and it can only be disclosed to the employees who are attending, to the union, and then also to any vendor hired to perform services at the orientation itself. Second component of the of SB 866 is that any employee who wants to change their deduction authorization must be directed to address that issue with their union. So for example, if an employee is a current dues-paying union member and no longer wants to be in the union, a public employer must direct that employee to speak with their union about changing their authorization. Okay? The employer cannot process any such requests directly from an employee. Okay? So an employee says, I no longer want to be a member of the union, the employer cannot say, okay, we're going to stop charging you and you're no longer going to be a union member. No. They have to go to the union, and then the employer is required to rely on the union's representation as to the employee's deduction authorization. Only if there is a dispute as to the deduction authorization would an employer be able to actually review the employee's written deduction authorization. Yeah. So the last major component of SB 866 is that if an employer intends to send a mass communication to multiple employees concerning the rights to join or support a union or to refrain from doing so, it must first meet and confer with the union. The parties must agree upon the content of that mass communication. If they are unable to agree, the employer can go ahead and send out its mass communication, but must also send out at the same time the union's own communication. Okay? So with this broad overview, I will now hand it over to Darren to answer kind of more specific questions. Specifically, how does JANUS change the law in California for agency fee payers and for union members?
Thanks, Gabby. So this is, again, kind of a new area, new terrain for us in terms of changing the paradigm of what we've known about for years and years. And we'll probably do this throughout the podcast here, but I just want to, again, remind the listeners here of the importance of terminology that's highlighted by the JANUS decision. So real quickly, consistent with JANUS, please just note that the term agency fee payer, also known as fee payer or fair share payer, describes a bargaining unit member who has chosen not to pay full membership dues to the union representing his or her bargaining unit. This person's a member of the bargaining unit, but not a member of the union. On the other hand, the term dues payer describes a bargaining unit member who has chosen to join the union and pay full membership dues. So this person is both a member of the bargaining unit and a member of the union. Under the pre-JANUS paradigm, there's another category of unit members who choose not to join or support an employee organization for religious reasons. And under the pre-JANUS paradigm, these religious objectors could be required to contribute a sum equal to the agency fee payer amount to a charitable organization. That's important to note because of the JANUS decision as well. And I'll talk about that in a second. Let's get back to the question of how does JANUS change California law with respect to agency fee payers? As Gabby described earlier, JANUS ruled that public employees may not be required to pay agency fees without the employee's affirmative consent. So under California law, the Educational Employment Relations Act, EERA, and other public sector labor laws expressly require represented bargaining unit members to pay an agency fee. For school and community college districts, the education code also contains provisions requiring the deduction of agency fees. That requirement, wherever it's found under the labor laws, is now unenforceable. So, for example, Section 3546 of the EERA says, the employer shall deduct the amount of the fair share service fee and pay that amount to the employee organization. That's no longer a requirement that's enforceable. We'll talk more about this later, but this also means that public employers can't force this deduction to employees and has to take or will have to take prompt action to change that practice. This doesn't mean, however, that the status of an agency fee payer is completely gone or dead. Janus did not prohibit the agency fee construct. It just ruled that it cannot be forced upon a bargaining unit member without affirmative consent. So it's possible to have a voluntary agency fee status, and this is something that unions will need to work out with their unit members and may be the subject of further negotiations in terms of the way that that's mentioned in bargaining unit agreements. But for the time being, agency fee payer arrangements can still be applied if there's affirmative consent from the employee. As far as Janus changing the law for in California for union members, there's not as significant an immediate effect, but it's important to note that the First Amendment issues addressed in Janus also affect union members to the extent that their membership is not the result of an affirmative consent to be a union member. It's not common for collective bargaining agreements to contain language regarding how or whether an employee joins the union, but if it does, it's important to remember that the law now requires an employee to affirmatively consent to deductions of from payroll in this area. So just as an opt-out of agency fee status is not allowed under Janus, and you have to opt in, an opt-out of union membership status is also not permissible under Janus. And if your labor contracts happen to have anything that creates a default that would deduct union membership dues, that should be examined closely with your legal counsel.
Darren, would you mind just telling us what a bargaining unit member is?
Sure. A bargaining unit member is a member of a group of employees that's considered a bargaining unit and recognized by the public employer or certified by PERB as a group of employees that have a community of interest that renders their terms and conditions of employment sufficiently similar to enable or facilitate collective bargaining by one representative on their behalf. So typically for schools and college districts, you would have a bargaining unit for classified employees, meaning non-certificated or non-academic employees. Within the classified employee group, you may have more specific groups such as transportation employees broken out because they have a community of interest that might be in one place viewed differently than clerical employees. Under specific California laws for school districts and college districts, you have basically your teaching folks or certificated employees being required to, for at least classroom teachers, be in one unit only. That unit often includes counselors and other folks who need credentials from the CTC, California Teacher Credentialing Commission. And you also have a requirement that academic employees be in a unit together.
Thanks, Darren. I'll turn it over to Dulcinea now. Dulcinea, can you explain the interplay and potential conflict between SB 866 and the Janus decision?
Sure. Thank you, Gabby. So as Gabby mentioned earlier, Janus was issued and SB 866 was signed into law within hours of one another on June 27th. That really left little to no time for the governor to consider the impact of Janus on the bill that was sitting on his desk. We all know that SB 866 was intended to reduce the impact of the Janus decision on labor unions in California. And as Gabby mentioned, Janus is, of course, a case focused on agency fees. However, there's some interesting language in Janus that provides that for any deduction, not just agency fees, to be taken from an employee, the employee must affirmatively consent to the deduction. And again, I think the court's language here is really interesting. What the court says specifically is neither an agency fee nor any other payment to the union may be deducted from a non-member's wages, nor may any attempt be made to collect such payment unless the employee affirmatively consents. By agreeing to pay, non-members are waiving their First Amendment rights, and such waiver cannot be presumed. So again, as Darren mentioned, Janus is really focusing on an opt-in, not an opt-out structure, and that affirmative consent is really, really critical in the eyes of the Janus court. This is to be contrasted with SB 866, which has a very different scheme for employees determining whether to be union members or continue to be agency fee payers. And in that situation, SB 866 and Janus seem to have an irreconcilable conflict that will require school districts to decide how to proceed. Specifically, the language of SB 866 says that employee requests to cancel or change authorization for payroll deduction for employee organizations are directed not to the employer, but are directed to the employee organization. And it's the employee organization or the union that is responsible for and in possession of those requests. And in the context of school districts, the governing boards are required to rely on the information provided to the union regarding whether an employee has authorized deduction. Again, this seems to create an inherent conflict with Janus, which requires the employer to know that there is an opt-in by the employee for deduction from their payroll for union purposes. So this is something that's going to, going forward, require employers to decide how to proceed when and if a dispute arises regarding whether an employee truly has consented to authorize payroll deductions for union dues or other payments. It's important to note that there are still several bills pending in the California legislature related to union dues deductions. And it's possible that we might see some cleanup legislation to possibly reconcile SB 866 with what Janus says before the end of the legislative term. But unless that happens, again, employers are going to be in the difficult spot of trying to reconcile what their obligations are under Janus with their obligations under SB 866. And it's important to note that SB 866, as a California piece of legislation, a state legislative movement, cannot override the decision of the United States Supreme Court in Janus.
All right, Dilson, I'll stay with you. So what are we supposed to do now with our current agency fee payers as far as payroll deductions?
So, Gabby, as you stated earlier, again, the Janus decision makes very clear that mandatory or involuntary agency fees are unconstitutional and they must stop immediately. That decision came down on June 27th. So, in reality, with the decision being issued on June 27th, payroll for most of you on the call had already locked well before that date. So, for purposes of June, there likely isn't anything that you can do at this point. The deductions have already been made and will be taken out of the checks that are about to be issued, and those payments, the monies are going to the union. So the unions now have those agency fees for the month of June. At least one employee organization or union has indicated that to the extent there were overpayments to the organization following the Janus decision, they will be addressing those with employees. So whether and how you communicate with your labor partners regarding the transmission of agency fees through the period of June 27th through today, June 29th, should be carefully considered and possibly in conjunction with legal counsel to determine what, if anything, do you do with regard to these agency fees that were paid for the last 3 days. Again, this money is not with you as the employer any longer. It's with the labor organization. So really, your focus now should be on the July payroll. So for school districts, we have employees who work 10, 11, and 12 months. Your 10 and 11-month employees typically are not paid in July. So July payroll is typically for your 12-month employees. So for the 10 and 11-month employees, you have a little bit more breathing room in terms of the agency fee deduction. But going forward, we see you having at least three options in terms of complying with Janus. One option is to stop deducting agency fees immediately for those employees that you have on record as being agency fees, and doing this without consultation with the union. Another option is to provide notice to your labor partners along with a list of the employees you currently have on record as being fee payers and give the union a short period of time, like 5 to 10 days, to let you know if there are any inaccuracies with the list or whether any of the fee payers that you have on your list have opted to become dues payers. Again, that gives an opportunity to ensure that the information that you are working from is accurate before you end the dues deductions. Another option is to work with your labor partners until agreement is reached on who is a fee payer, even if that takes you past the month of July. And then you rely on the unions or your labor partners to defend and indemnify the district in the event a deduction is continued and the employee challenges it. As Lou said at the outset of this presentation, and I think we can't stress enough, there isn't a single right approach. Which approach you take depends on the unique circumstances of your district, the politics of your community, the relationships with your labor partners. One thing that we do recommend is clear and direct communication with your staff and labor partners about the approach you're going to take so that everyone is on the same page moving forward.
Gabby, this is Darren. I think it's important to note and to remind everyone that while the uncertainty that would exist with giving a third party, meaning the union, the role of determining who's chosen to be a dues payer or an agency fee payer may make an employer uncomfortable, that is what the status of the law is. And the law, SB 866, does provide and require the union to indemnify the employer for any claims made by an employee for the deductions, if the deductions or lack of deductions are made based on reliance on the union's representation. So there is some provision for an employer to not be held liable for errors or problems with that type of thing.
Yeah. Darren, thanks for pointing that out, as that was explicit new language added under SB 866. Dulcinea, I heard you want to chime in. Go ahead.
I did. I wanted to just make clear that under SB 866, there is no timelines that have been imposed for the labor organization to process requests to become a dues payer. So under 866, that process for the employee organization to receive information from employees about the status, union membership or non, and convey that to the district, there is no timeline set up for that. So again, I think that we could end up seeing some questions about how quickly information is conveyed either from the union to the district or from employees to the unions. But again, I think it's important for everyone to know that there are no statutory timelines associated with this new requirement under 866.
And Gabby, let me just mention one final thing on 866, because this is our slide that we're talking about. You did mention what mass communications are covered, or you mentioned that they are covered under SB 866, but I think it's important for our audience to know that it's defined under SB 866 to be, or mass communications defined to be, a written document or a script for an oral or recorded presentation or message that's intended for delivery to multiple public employees. So the language is fairly loose and broad and can be interpreted in different ways, and it's important for employers to know that they should be careful when their employees are speaking or their management speaking about the issue, because we wouldn't want that to be misinterpreted to be a mass communication.
Sure. I'm going to move us forward. Our next question directly addresses what can be communicated to employees on this issue. So, Lou, I'll have you take it from there.
Thank you, Gabby. Obviously, both Janus and SB 866
our sea change in California. There's going to be conflict on the interpretation, the meaning. It's important for all of our public agencies to be careful how they proceed so that we can minimize the conflict that could lead to lawsuits and waste funds in defending those lawsuits. There is an indemnification provision in SB 866, but it pertains to reliance upon the information provided by the union to the employer regarding who is in the union and who has chosen not to join the union or wants to revoke their union authorization. So as public agencies were required to rely upon those representations, and if those representations are incorrect and we get sued, it is the union's obligation under SB 866 to indemnify us. It's interesting that it does not require defense. That means the public agency defends itself and then seeks indemnification from the unions. Having said that, not all aspects of indemnification may apply. They seem to be limited in SB 866 upon reliance on representations made by the union. So one of the points that had just been made is if somebody seeks reimbursement for the 3 or 4 days in June that dues were unlawfully deducted, whose responsibility is that? Now, it's our opinion that the money is turned over to the union, so the recovery of those funds needs to be sought from the union. But these kinds of issues, these finer points, are things that are going to be sorted out as we become more and more familiar with the law and work through some of these issues. And regarding communications, this is also a significant change because SB 866 does not allow any communications with the employees as a whole, or mass communications, I should say, without having first provided a copy of that communication to the union and conferring with the union as to the contents of that communication. Now, communications are defined in SB 866 as any writing, a script, a recorded message, a script for oral presentation. So all of that, if it's intended for mass distribution to the employees, is required to be provided to the union in advance and conferred with them regarding the contact. There is, first of all, no requirement that a public agency issue a mass communication. But it may be in most of our agency's interest to let their employees know what's going to happen from here on. So I think most will want to do a communication and just be careful to make sure that you've provided that to the union in advance of its distribution and you meet with them regarding any changes they want to make in the communication. If you don't reach agreement, an agreement is not required. This is not negotiations, which may involve impasse and fact-finding. That's not necessary. SB 866 indicates that if there's no agreement reached, the public agency is free to do the distribution as long as it simultaneously distributes the union's mass communication. If the union chooses to distribute a mass communication, it has to provide the employer with sufficient number of copies to provide to each employee that's going to be receiving it. Now, mass communications generally is defined as something that goes out to all employees. It is highly likely that your payroll departments may get calls from individual employees saying, when are you going to stop taking my dues out? I don't see anything in SB 866 that prevents you from answering the question. Generally, when we get questions about dues deductions, we'd like to refer those to the union. And I'm going to be speaking a little bit later about, maybe I'll speak about it now, the importance of having a single spokesperson. The law is new. We're sorting out its meaning. I think it's very important for each public agency to designate a single spokesperson so that we don't end up giving mixed signals to the employees about what we're planning to do and the significance of both the legislation and the case.
That's a great piece of advice, Luke. I'm sure there's going to just be a flurry of questions, especially, you know, when we get closer to the start of the new school year.
And Gabby, this is Dulcinea. If I can just chime in briefly to add to what Lou was saying, one of the things that I think is really critically important for employers to think about is the number of people who potentially constitute the district or district administration. So it's really easy for us to think that, okay, my superintendent knows about this mass communication thing, my HR assistant superintendent knows about this mass communication limitation. But it's important to think about all the other potential spokespeople that you have out there, and those can be your board members, who may not know about 866 at all, and they may start talking about Janus. They may start talking to people about the merits of being in a union or not. You have principals who are often the first people that employees go to with questions, who also may not have the in-depth knowledge that folks at the district office have relative to these new requirements. And so when you think of your communication plan and strategy, I think it's really important, like Lou was saying, to designate a spokesperson, but also make sure people know who that spokesperson is, and also make sure that people understand the rationale for you appointing that person as a spokesperson, that you are doing this because you're trying to protect the district, and reminding people from your principals to your supervisor to your managers, all the way up to your board members, that what they say can potentially run afoul of the law, and giving them some education as to what they need to think about before they engage in these conversations.
Thanks for listening to part one of our comprehensive Janus podcast. If you'd like to hear the conclusion of this discussion, download part two, available now. If you have any questions about this topic, please contact the hosts of this episode or an attorney at any one of our 8 offices throughout California. For details on how to get a hold of us, visit our podcast page at lozanosmith.com/podcast.